If you're trying to make some sense of the situation in Afghanistan and how the Taliban regained power, we want to bring some historical context to how the group first formed, broke apart, and later emerged again. Let's bring in Robert Cruz. He's professor of history at Stanford and a leading scholar on Afghanistan. Robert, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
Professor Cruz, if we can start in 1979, we know the Soviet Union embarked on its own adventures in Afghanistan. What is the essential history there? And in it, do we see the seeds of the Taliban?
I think the place to begin actually is slightly before the Soviet invasion. We might begin our story in April of 1978 when a group of leftist revolutionaries seized power by force of arms in Kabul and then began to embark on a revolutionary project to introduce socialism to Afghanistan. And early on, both Moscow and Washington began to invest in the future of the country, attempting to back particular groups to shape the future.
Oh, suddenly this becomes a critical place in the Cold War, yeah?
Exactly. That's right. And it really begins in the summer of 1979 when the United States begins to send aid to these emergent groups who claim they're fighting in the name of Islam. They're engaged in what they call jihad, so they call themselves mujahideen. Their strength then causes Moscow to panic in part, and then we see the Soviet invasion of December 1979. And they managed to fight the Red Army to a standstill with the crucial backing of the United States and especially the covert operations of the CIA. The Red Army had found itself flummoxed by the guerrilla tactics of the Mujahideen. But as the Soviets withdrew in 1989, the various Mujahideen parties worked together, but they never formed a cohesive whole. And so they maintained internal rivalries. They fought numerous battles against one another. So as the Soviets begin to withdraw, there is a stage for a potential fight among Mujahideen, but they managed to parcel together temporary coalitions. As a coalition, they seize power in 1992 in Kabul and declare an Islamic State.
Understand. And so here we are in the early 90s. What are the conditions on the ground that eventually, by 96, right, lead to the introduction of the Taliban and eventually they're taking control of much of the country?
Right. Domestically, the coalition of Mujahideen parties proved to be untenable. They had deep personal and ideological rivalries among themselves. They destroyed much of Kabul in the process of a civil war. Local populations everywhere suffered under the rapacious rule of different kinds of military commanders. So in this environment, a group of young Mujahideen in the south, in Kandahar, emerged around 1994, claiming that they were, in Robin Hood fashion, going to restore justice. They were going to fight on the side of the oppressed. And they had a vision drawn from the jihad, a kind of Islamic morality. And they began to call themselves, they adopted a title of modesty, called themselves essentially students, or Islamic students, Taliban. And so in 1994, they began to operate in this province really as a force to guard transport and to safeguard the roads. And very importantly, they begin to circulate a kind of mythology about themselves as people who have righted wrongs and reimposed a kind of morality. And they will have a vision to take control of the entire territory of Afghanistan as a national government. And that begins to attract the attention of international sponsors. Pakistan is very interested in the success of this group because it has its own geopolitical vision in which Afghanistan is essential to its competition with India. You may know the story of oil companies that began to get involved in Afghan politics in the early 90s because the oil markets, the oil resources, oil and gas, these vast reserves in Central Asia began to attract the attention of oil companies who wanted to gain access to these resources, but without working with either Russia or Iran. This is the first moment when we see the Taliban really emerging in the imagination of regional and international actors as a potential national government for Afghanistan.
So, right, so we have, as you're describing, the Taliban with the support of Pakistan, with the support of big oil here, eventually consolidating its control over the country. Remind us how they ruled society as a preview for what Taliban 2.0 might look like.
It's worth dwelling for a moment on how they get from Kandahar to the rest of the country.
Okay.
They have what we might call, in American context, a brilliant ground game of interacting with local leaders, using threats, using targeted assassinations, using persuasion, And they very skillfully send advanced teams of preachers forward to go to mosques to begin to kind of soften the ground for their arrival. And they offer a choice, either surrender and we'll leave you alone, or we will fight you and kill you, all while trying to essentially decapitate the leaders of local society. And it leads them to the west of the country and then to Kabul in September 1996, where it's clear that they have an agenda of imposing an order that is at odds with urban Afghan society. There are different agendas that people see in the Taliban. Some see a restoration of Pashtun power. Some like the idea of an Islamic order. But immediately it's clear in September, as they enter Kabul, they themselves are committed to their own agenda, which is a draconian understanding of law, of the policing of public space. They're about expelling women from public view. This is when they introduce these policies of forcing men to attend mosque prayers, to grow beards of a particular length, and they begin to engage in campaigns of public violence to attempt to intimidate the Afghan population. The stonings, assassinations, they turn a football stadium into a killing field. And this alienates Kabul society and alienates many supporters except Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, who remain their staunch international backers. Meanwhile, the society is slowly taken under control of the Taliban as they move. But importantly, they don't take the entire country. In countries where they confront other ethnic groups, for example, the Hazaras in Mazar-e-Sharif in the north, in Mazar, they commit acts of genocide. In 1998, they mass murder several thousand Hazara boys and girls and engage in sexual violence.
And during those years, the Taliban shelters al-Qaeda, this terrorist organization. How does that relationship come about?
Well, there had been a long history during the 1980s of Arab fighters, really fighters from all over the world, seeing in the Afghan jihad against the Soviet Union, a sacred cause of global importance. So Osama bin Laden and those who would become al-Qaeda were among hundreds of these fighters, perhaps thousands, from Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. Al-Qaeda and the Taliban were always distinct. They had different agendas, but there was a degree of overlap in terms of some ideological features. And broadly, I think the Taliban leadership liked the idea of keeping people like al-Qaeda under their umbrella because it gave them leverage and gave them some international significance. That said, when Biden said yesterday, when he declared that we killed bin Laden, mission accomplished, that's actually not true, because the Taliban have remained in a loose coalition with other kinds of radical groups, including, according to many accounts, al-Qaeda. So al-Qaeda likely still exists in Afghanistan. So looking at this through a kind of 20-year lens, as we approach 9/11, we now confront a moment in which some of the key features of that environment remain intact, with the Taliban in Kabul and a host of radical groups still functioning in the country.
Finally, I know to kind of wrap up this long and complicated history, we know 9/11 comes in 2001 and the U.S. invades shortly after, announces it has taken out the Taliban, and of course, we're here 20 years later. What should we know about the Taliban's resiliency over this time, how it managed to divide its time and be able to return?
That's a crucial question. I think the mistake from the outside, in Washington and elsewhere, was that the Americans had vanquished the Taliban, that they were defeated, that the struggle was over. But in practice, the Taliban merely scattered. The leadership went to Pakistan, where it found safe haven. And the resiliency story is really quite striking, because they managed, over the course of 20 years, to sustain this movement with extraordinary ideological coherence. Although the United States managed to decimate their ranks, along with the NATO partners, again and again on the battlefield, they continued to replenish the ranks, I think in part because in combating the Taliban, the United States also engaged in the killing of numerous civilians. And I think that dynamic of harming and killing civilian populations was a crucial factor in the regrowth of the movement. But crucially, the leadership kept its eye on the prize, which was to restore what they call their Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. So if we go back to the original kind of foundation myth of the Taliban in 1994, when they claimed to be the kind of Robin Hood, do-gooders, the saviors who are going to bring justice, they continued that campaign in the countryside. They always had the conception of being a state in the waiting. And so the events of the last few weeks have shown both the waning of Afghan state power and I think the strength of, and really the sophistication of a Taliban movement that is ideologically not compelling to all Afghans. It really speaks to a small group, but the operational power, the use of violence, and then crucially Pakistani backing are all factors that came together. And so what should we expect now? I think it's an open question, and it hinges upon, I think, their use of force and the international community's capacity to temper that use of force to avoid what could be a horrible bloodshed, kind of catalyzed by the Biden administration's very clumsy withdrawal.
Well, the dark warnings of history, it seems, about the Taliban, its methods, its effectiveness, and its past relationship with extremist groups. That is Robert Cruz, professor of history at Stanford University. Professor, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.